This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's episode 299. We're getting ready for our 300th show next week. This edition of How Do We Fix It is a needed tonic when some of us are consumed with rage and toxic polarization. Love yourself and humanity. Here goes.
Everything is so mediated by how we're responding on social media. A lot of us don't take the time to actually develop healthy relationships with ourselves as separate from how we interact on social media, nor do we know that, such a thing is worth doing.
Our show is about fixes.
Yeah, how to make the world a better place.
How do we fix it?
How do we fix it?
You know, a lot of our shows deal with the growing intellectual movement that stands a little bit outside the usual political divides of right versus left. This movement that we like doesn't really have a name, but you could call it heterodoxy, being open to ideas from different sides.
Our guest today is certainly a heterodox thinker, but more than that, she wants to teach those skills to others. She wants everyone to think for themselves.
Chloe Valdery is an entrepreneur and educator who has created a fascinating program called The Theory of Enchantment. It's a curriculum that teaches personal resilience, but also tolerance for other viewpoints.
Chloe joins us from New York. Welcome to How Do We Fix It?
Thank you for having me.
The bedrock of your work is something you call the three principles. Can you just get us started by listing what those principles are?
The first principle is treat people like human beings, not political abstractions. Second principle is criticize to uplift and empower, never to tear down, never to destroy. And third principle is try to root everything you do in love and compassion.
So let's start with the first one, Chloe. What do you mean when you say we are human beings and not political abstractions?
Yeah, I think this is the first principle because it's one that's sort of taken for granted and a bit elusive at first glance. It's like, of course, we're human beings. We're not trees or rocks or, you know, but we take for granted the human condition and the fact that as human beings, we're capable of change. We're capable of incredible potential, both in the good sense and in a negative sense. And we also take for granted the fact that as human beings, we all deal with a various set of complex issues, including this issue of vulnerability, the issue of imperfection, the issue of making peace with our mortality. Like, this is what it fundamentally means to be human.
And how does that apply to the current moment? I'm thinking especially of social media, where it seems that so many people are objectified by others.
Yeah, I mean, I think for a whole host of reasons stemming from how algorithms are shaped, social media triggers us and incentivizes us to caricature one another, to put people into boxes, to assume that snapshot experiences of each other, can suggest the full complexity of the human being, which is just not true. Another thing I'd say is that if you think about the difference between our limbic system in our brains and the prefrontal cortex of our brains, and, you know, sort of like the lizard brain aspect of the limbic system. Social media is definitely oftentimes triggering that aspect of our brains. And so if we can sort of get out of that and come into the present and realize that not everything requires that sort of response, and certainly not everything requires a fear-based response, I think we would be able to be in better relationship with each other.
So some people with a big idea write a book or they go on lecture tours, but you started a company to teach your ideas to other people. And tell us about that company. Tell us about the theory of enchantment.
Yes. So the theory of enchantment takes those three principles that I mentioned earlier and really turns them into a practice through a 25 lesson course. And basically instructs people on first how to be in a healthy relationship with themselves. And then after you've learned how to be in a relationship with yourself, you can learn empathy, you can build a capacity for compassion, and be in relationship with your neighbor. So the course is all about that. It uses a lot of tools found in developmental psychology. It's based upon Abraham Maslow's idea of this hierarchy of needs with self-actualization and transcendence being at the top. Also teaches important skill sets like stoicism. But in addition to all of these educationally rooted tools, it's also a very fun course because it uses pop culture to reinforce a lot of the teachings. So for example, when we teach stoicism, we talk a lot about Marcus Aurelius and some of the things he taught, but we also bring it to the present and we use The Lion King as a way to sort of like see Stoic values play itself out in a particular story.
Well, let me ask you about that. How do you use The Lion King?
You know, Simba in The Lion King starts out as a very juvenile, immature, egocentric being who thinks that the purpose of kingship is all about brushing up on his mane and having the loudest roar. He confuses bravery for recklessness. So there's a lot of that in the beginning of the film. And in Stoicism, one of the most important teachings of Stoicism is to meditate on your mortality, to remember that you are mortal and that you will die. And one of the first things that Mufasa tries to teach Simba before he dies in the beginning of The Lion King is this essential claim, is this essential truth. He says, you know, we're all connected in the great circle of life. I won't be here all the time with you. One day I will pass on. And so Simba in his very youthful jubilance can't quite understand this. And Simba has a rude awakening when his father dies, when Mufasa is killed, which he initially can't handle, right? So he goes into exile. But he must learn to make peace with this fact and understand what it actually means to be king, which is taking responsibility for your actions and taking responsibility for those under your leadership. You really can't run away into exile, away from those responsibilities. And of course, this idea is very much embodied in the entire song, The Circle of Life, which is both the opening song of The Lion King and the point of The Lion King. Like Simba has to actually learn and internalize the meaning of The Circle of Life in order to become king and take his rightful place in the Rock.
Okay, when can I sign up for this course?
You can sign up anytime. It's online.
So how does it work exactly? You have instructors who go into schools, or is it something that schools take the curriculum from the theory of enchantment? Or how do people go through these modules?
Our course is on an online platform called Teachable. If you are a school, now I recognize that it is very difficult for schools as a whole, especially now with COVID-19, to make social emotional learning purchases. When we think of social emotional learning, we think of how to give students not only the capacity for IQ, but for EQ, for emotional intelligence, to have the necessary tools, again, to be in a healthy relationship with both themselves and their peers. And this is especially relevant for teenagers, you know, Gen Z. Any teenager is in a developmental stage in their life at the moment. Their brains are still developing. They're developing hormones for the first time. They're still having to navigate this crazy world, and they need tools to be able to teach them how to do that.
What's the inspiration for that lovely title, The Theory of Enchantment?
Yes, so it's a great question. The primary source of inspiration is, I'd say, that The Theory of Enchantment really helps awaken people to the wonder of their own lives by taking them through this process of self-discovery, by teaching them in an internalized way that human beings are capable of incredible change for the good, incredible, what I would call the redemptive process of being transformed from, you know, engaging in bad behavior to engaging in good behavior. And that wonder and that joy, I think I very much associate with this concept of enchantment, because it's a feeling full of awe. And I think it changes one's relationship with one's life once one goes through the process. But in addition to that, you know, enchantment is already associated with Disney, it's sort of like the Enchanted Forest, this idea of discovering, you know, discovering truth through fairy tales and through age-old stories is something that is a theme that runs throughout the course.
Your course and your writing pass on this idea that pop culture can be very important. And I often think it's dismissed as being just merely, you know, 2 or 3 minute love songs or movies that are purely for entertainment. But Disney and Beyonce can be really inspiring for people. Could you explain why, in the case of Beyonce, that she is this such a strong force in the lives of especially young women?
Yeah, so I always like to say that if we believe that certain wisdom is timeless, if there is such a thing as timeless wisdom, then we should expect to see them in contemporary form. And so I think that pop culture, broadly speaking, embodies that. In terms of Beyonce, I'd say, you know, Beyonce represents and has painstakingly crafted an image that is associated with this a very specific archetype, which is the archetype of the divine feminine, the benevolent mother. It's an archetype that has been talked about by Carl Jung and Joseph Campbell and others who, you know, sort of talk about this kind of concept of the hero's journey. So Beyonce has embodied this in a lot of the art and visual albums that she's put out. But what she's doing in a lot of these pieces is embodying this concept of the benevolent mother, the divine feminine, which is why so many women see themselves and their potential reflected in her artwork. Not only because she does it so well, but because she is paying ode to a timeless archetype that has existed across multiple cultures and multiple countries, which I think is also really cool because it shows you how interconnected we are as a species.
I love it when Joseph Campbell comes up on the podcast. So it's not just pop culture and pop music, though. You also have students read James Baldwin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think James Baldwin was one of the few cultural critics writing in the 50s and 60s who introduced a psychological lens to the challenges of race and racism in America. He wasn't only speaking about sort of what you hear today a lot in a lot of circles, which is just the external structures, but he actually talked about the internal structures of the human condition, what caused people to become prejudiced in the first place, which has a lot to do with insecurity and self-contempt and overcompensation. For example, in his essay, The Fire Next Time, he speaks about the racism of white America, but he also speaks about the racism of folks in the Nation of Islam, for example, and where they were coming from. And so he presents a very broad and holistic lens that is critical and very much incisive, but also is ultimately an attempt to have compassion for the people even that he's critical of.
It's How Do We Fix It? I'm Richard Davies.
And I'm Jim Meggs.
And we're speaking with Chloe Valdery about the theory of enchantment, which is also a company that she heads up.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
And we're back. There's a political ideology out there that seems to be everywhere today. Sometimes it goes under the label of intersectionality or critical race theory. You see it in books like White Fragility that says basically the most important thing about a person is what group are they in? You know, what identity labels can you put on them? Race, gender, sexual orientation. Your work goes in a different direction. It doesn't deny these identities, but maybe wants to transcend them. But I guess I'm wondering, why is this intersectional viewpoint so dominant today?
That's a good question. I'm not sure I know the answer to why it's become so popular. It's definitely an academic thing more than anything else. I don't think that the average person necessarily subscribes to this, even though they may be familiar with the terminology. If you were to explain what the terminology means, I think the average person would actually not agree with all of the details. But I would also say that there is, I think, a bit of a crisis of meaning that we're dealing with in modernity. And this crisis of meaning, unfortunately, exacerbates tensions between human beings, turns us into more cynical beings.
What do you mean when you say there's a crisis of meaning?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we live in a very hyper commodified society, and we lack a sense of inner autonomy and a sense of inner selfhood and a sense of locus of control, because everything is so mediated by how we're responding on social media. A lot of us don't take the time to actually develop healthy relationships with ourselves as separate from how we interact on social media, nor do we know that such a thing is worth doing. Also, there's so much about life in general, but certainly about social media, that is fleeting. And if you are not able to recognize that and pull yourself out and depersonalize the interactions that you're having on social media and act as if everything on social media is somehow intrinsically connected to your self-worth as a human being, that suggests a lack of a locus of control, an internal locus of control, because everything that defines you is external, as opposed to internal, as opposed to you having a deep sense of your self-worth.
Let's move to the second principle in your set of ideas, which is use criticism to uplift, not to tear down. That is something most of us have to remind ourselves of, right?
Yeah, certainly, including myself. I mean, this is one of the hardest principles to put into practice. But where this comes from is actually, in part, understanding where or how extremism develops. It's usually the internal insecurity that drives a lot of this. And that insecurity combined with a measure of self-contempt oftentimes results in overcompensation for that self-contempt, and leads to these individuals looking toward groups that will fill up their need for a sense of belonging or need for a sense of community, et cetera, which is what all human beings need, right? So if you know that this is a process by which people join extremist groups, for example, and it could be racially extremist groups, but it could also be gang members, you know, it doesn't matter. The process works in the same way. If you understand this, then the way to intercept or preempt that process requires that you not contribute to that level of internal insecurity by criticizing them in a manner that just says that they're worthless, because then that will actually make the process by which they join these extremist groups more likely.
You recently said, if we don't have the skill set to love ourselves, how can we love each other? And part of your mission is to teach people that skill set?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this is what we go over in the first third of the course. It's all about practice and self-love. And to reiterate, James Baldwin argued about this specifically in the context of prejudice versus racial harmony. He said, he wrote about this in the 60s. He said, when white Americans, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said, when white Americans learn to love themselves, there will be no more racism. And that's the point. And that's one of the most profound points that he made in most of his writings, and something that we I think, gloss over today or selectively ignore. It's like, yes, and this is, it's not true on the only on the racial front, but in general, it's like the human condition. You cannot love others if you are not in love with yourself. And moreover, if you lack that love for yourself, the likelihood that you will lash out at others as a result becomes higher.
And that leads us to your third principle, lead with love and compassion. How do we do that?
So the entire course is really a practice in this. And, you know, we study Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech, but we also study incredible moments in history when in the aftermath of hatred and bigotry, love and reconciliation actually took over because of a few key decisions made by leaders in certain societies. So, for example, we studied the aftermath of the Rwandan genocide and how the Hutus and the Tutsis actually reconciled themselves with each other systematically, in part through a system of restorative justice that was implemented in that society. We studied the Disney film Moana, which is a beautiful representation of this. And we also study other elements of pop culture that reiterate this importance of self-love and then agape love in general. We studied, for example, Les Mis, which reinforces a lot of these teachings as well. But again, the entire course ends up being actually a lesson or a practice in how to love. But we just make it explicit when it comes to the third principle.
There's so much hatred and division out there. Not just on social media, but sometimes even in the streets. Yeah. But you say love is the answer and that we can learn how to love. You're devoting your life and work to this. Are you optimistic?
Well, I think one has to be. but I think that if I work in this direction, I'm more likely to achieve my goals and get other people to move in this direction than if I, you know, were to just sort of be passive about the whole thing. But actually, I do think that, you know, from the feedback that I've received and the responses that I've gotten to Theory of Enchantment thus far, I think people are actually hungry for a framework that is all about racial justice and police reform and all these very, very important issues, but that's rooted in the love piece for it. I think people are looking for it. So I'd say, yeah, I'm pretty optimistic, and I think ultimately it can win and help us overcome some of our more base tendencies to descend into rage and to descend into violence and descend into otherizing and to overcome that. And to be able to contribute to that project is a real gift. And so I'm just really grateful to be able to do so.
Chloe Valdery, I sure hope you're right.
Me too.
Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, guys.
And Jim, before our conversation, it's our recommendation. What do you have for us this week?
Well, you know, I'm a big music fan. And my recommendation this week is a novel about music by David Mitchell, the writer who did The Cloud Atlas, The Bone Clocks, and a bunch of other wonderful novels. This takes place in the 60s, and it's about a British rock and roll group that combines a little bit of jazz and progressive rock with a little folk influence. So maybe you would think about a band like Traffic or somebody like that. And he weaves in a lot of real life figures from the world of music, you know, Jimi Hendrix and Eric Clapton make little appearances, and Joni Mitchell makes a little appearance. It's just, for a music fan, it's really fun. It's just a lovely novel, Utopia Avenue by David Mitchell.
I love this concept of using both classical literature and philosophy, along with the music of Beyoncé and the Disney movies, to teach some fundamental truths about the way we live our lives.
Yeah, it's a great concept. It's very inclusive. She made a point at once that people have trouble understanding what's inside of them, but sometimes they can see themselves reflected in entertainment. And I think this is maybe especially true for adolescents. It gives some models and some things to talk about to help realize that these values of rising above emotion and being more tolerant of others and more loving, that these are capacities they have. They may not have been developed yet.
And this show is really a companion piece to the recent interview we did with Eric Weiner about his book, The Socrates Express, and this whole idea that in this anxious time, that philosophy and ancient wisdom can help us center ourselves, give us a better sense of meaning and purpose in our lives.
Absolutely. Chloe is in a really interesting position of essentially arguing the opposite of what is being argued in a lot of progressive circles today. She's essentially put together an entire program to help people see themselves differently from that model. But when I asked her about it a couple of times, it's not something she necessarily wants to take on head on. It's not her style to go to the barricades and fight against ideas so much as to produce an alternate path that's more attractive and that it can win people over in a positive way.
Yeah, and leading with love and compassion. It's How Do We Fix It? I'm Richard Davies.
And I'm Jim Meggs.
And our producer is Miranda Schaefer. And this show is a production of Davies Content. Find out more about our podcast consulting at daviescontent.com. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is part of the Democracy Group.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.